Hey, and welcome to the Humanity Church Podcast. So excited that you're here. We hope that you enjoy this week's talk and it really connects to your life in a meaningful way. If you're live in the Pomona area, we would love to have you at one of our gatherings at 10 a.m. or at one of our Humanity groups that meet all throughout the week, all over the city. If you want more information about our community, you can go to www.humanitychurch.com or download our app on your phone on Apple or Android. If you like what you're hearing here and want to continue to support the ongoing work at Humanity, you can text the word Humanity Church, one word, to 77977 and give back financially in just about 10 seconds. Hey, and here's this week's talk that was given live at our Sunday gathering at Humanity Church.
Well, we are in the middle, almost smack dab in the middle of our Enneagram conversation. And this series is called Heart and Soul. And we're taking a look just at that. Our heart and our soul, we're using that to look through the scriptures using this tool called the Enneagram. The Enneagram has been around for centuries, used in faith communities to really help people understand what drives them at their core. It creates a spiritual map for people to know where they are in the spectrum of faith. Sometimes it's really hard to be like, where am I in all of this? And what the Enneagram provides is a space to say, here you are. And for years and years, we've used an assessment called the Strengths Finder. Give me a woot woot if you've taken the Strengths Finder. Yeah. So we believe in helping people discover their strengths. I've kind of labeled the Enneagram the weakness finder because it really helps us to know, hey, here's where we miss it at times in our faith journey, and here is the brilliance that lives inside of us as well in all of that. Because the Enneagram was developed around a deep spirituality, taking a look at who we are, and it shows us our inner longings and our desires. And when our longings and our desires are pointed in healthy direction, it moves us to the most powerful expression of humanity that we know. When those are fueled by Jesus, when they're fueled by anything else other than that, things like greed or pride or arrogance or foolishness, we find ourselves diminishing our humanity and the humanity of people around us. It's interesting because the goal of religion for years and years and years has been trying to convince people with external elements of a spiritual reality of who God is. As if we can prove, like, this happened at this time, and here's the scientific data, and here's the DNA evidence. And that's fine for many people. But here's the thing. I actually believe that the most powerful proof of God exists with our inner desires. That it exists with this drive inside of us to go and pursue and create and to live. And here's what I'm convinced is that if we follow those with everything inside of us, that we will eventually run to the end of ourselves or hit a wall, or it will lead us straight to Jesus. That if we keep asking the questions that live inside of us long enough, if we stay in the hunt long enough, I'm actually convinced that God has placed those desires inside of us so that we would eventually find ourselves running straight to Him. Because when He meets those desires and when He meets those inner longings and when he starts to answer some of the questions inside of us, those that drive not only is quieted, but then we get to live out the fullness that we were designed to live in. And so we've taken a look at the first three of the Enneagram. The first one was our perfectionist, the reformer, the one who longs to be perfect. And that's really what drives them. In fact, their deepest fear is that they cannot be perfect. And that when they live at their greatest state, when connected to Christ, that they find themselves realizing that they have already been made perfect and there's no striving needed. And so they get to use all of that reforming power to bring justice and hope and beauty to the world around them. We looked 3 weeks ago at Enneagram 2, and they're driven by this need to be needed, and it comes out in the form of service, the helper. And so they're constantly helping and serving and giving of themselves. When informed by an unhealthy perspective, they will find themselves anger and bitter and frustrated that no one is helping them back or no one is needing them back. And in their best state, they are servants that move everything that we do forward. And last week we talked about the achiever, and they really want to know that they are making a difference in this world and that they are productive in some way, shape, or form. In fact, the greatest fear for a three is that they are unproductive in some way, that they are not going to actually achieve what it is that they're called here to. Now, of course, when driven in an unhealthy state, that will lead towards all kinds of burnout and frustration and exhaustion in trying to be the one who achieves everything, to prove to others that they are worthy. and when connected to Christ, that moves them towards such a powerful space of drivenness and accomplishing beauty in the world around them. And today we're going to look at number 4. But before I begin, here's the thing. What I've been hearing is some of you have been taking your assessments. Some of you are like, I think I'm a 7, or I may be a 3, or I might be a 2, and there's this thing called a wing that I don't know what it is. So here's the thing. The goal of the Enneagram is not to figure out what number you are. There's nothing sacred about your numbers. There's no like first Enneagram in the Bible, and you go, let's turn to first Enneagram chapter 3, right? So this is not sacred, this is not scriptures, this is not about who you are, actually. In fact, this is never about who you are. One of the things that we are going to avoid in our community is saying, well, I am a 7, period, therefore I do this, or I am a 4, therefore I have to do this, or I can't do this. This is not an identity that you take on. It is never a definitive statement about who you are. This is about seeing where you're at in the grand scheme of your own spirituality and what this looks like. See, here's the thing, is we actually have a little bit of all of us in these. How many of you have found like truth in these numbers? You're like, oh, that's also true of me, right? I also help people, longing to have people acknowledge me, right? I also get frustrated when the world is not as it should be or whatever it may be. So this is not about finding your number. This is us noticing where we're thrown towards, where we naturally drift towards, and then knowing both how to, I'll use a big Christian word that's loaded, how to repent, how to switch from an unhealthy space, but also how to move into a space of health and beauty and to utilize everything inside of us to serve the world around us. See, here's the idea around the Enneagram, is that if we know who we are created to be and that gets connected to Christ, then when we come together as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9s, that we would actually get a full picture of who God is. Mm-hmm. That we each carry a thin slice of the DNA of God. And that when that thin slice of that DNA is illuminated and revived by the power of Jesus and we come together in community, that you can see the whole spectrum of God's heart and his character. That we each bring a unique piece to the communal aspect of who God is. That we don't actually get to see the fullness of God in a person. I know we like to think that, right? That God exists fully in me. And he does. Christ does. But there's only a thin slice of who he is that gets seen in each of us. It's when we come together in community. This is why here at Humanity Church, we believe that our community groups are the fullest expression of who God is, because it's when we come together and experience him in all of that, that we see the full picture of who he is. And so this isn't really about you discovering your number as much as it is knowing where you're at on your own spiritual journey, but also knowing where other people are at. Because I've noticed some people are like, well, I'm waiting for week 8 till I get my turn. Because here's the thing, as we talk about 4s today, guess what? You're going to go, oh, that's my uncle, or that's my wife, or that's my son. And you will know how to interact with them better and how to create a deeper community within your life. So we're going to jump in today talking about 4, which we call our individualists. But I want to pause, as we've done every week, and pray for our 4s as we jump into this conversation. Jesus, we thank you that you have so much grace for us, and that when you come to us with such acceptance and love and hope, God, and that you also come with us saying, hey, there's a bigger version that's available. There's a larger game that you can play that's not fueled by our own brokenness or our own desires or striving or trying to make things happen, but you come to us saying, hey, I want to invite you into this larger picture. And so I pray today for our 4s that identify with that space, God, and that you would give them grace and ears to hear today, God, that you would remove away any other voice besides yours as we step into this conversation. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. We at Humanity Church have a very high value for creativity, if you haven't noticed that. That it's actually one of our core values. That a few weeks ago, we talked about how creativity is the natural result of spirituality. And we believe that as you connect to Jesus, that your life becomes profoundly more creative. That your character is refined in such a way that unlocks possibility and it opens up futures that were not available to you previous to connecting to him. And here's the thing, is that this is a relatively newer idea introduced to the church in the last millennium, I would say. But the thing is that this is what the church actually used to believe at its core. That this was actually a fundamental core value of the church. Because here's the thing. Historically, the church has been the epicenter for art and culture. That when you look back at history, it was Michelangelo who painted upon the ceilings of the Sistine Chapel, not on a canvas. He was like, where should I put my art that will express it in its greatest form? I know, the church. Right? And so the church was intimately connected to creativity, to art, to philosophy, and to understanding the deeper things of this world. And somewhere along the way, we forgot this. And see, when fours hear this, they're already leaping with inside of themselves, saying, yes, the church is the creative center. I am the individual who will bring beauty back into this world. But somewhere along the way, we forgot this. But see, fours really believe this at their core, that creativity and uniqueness is the result of spirituality. Because of this, we're actually heavier than most churches with fours. In fact, when people have filled out, by the way, if you've taken the assessment, you can open up the app and just click Enneagram and put in your name and information. It helps us kind of get a map of our community. But we are heavier on fours than most churches, because not only do we create a space for fours to play, a space for fours to have room to create and to be their individual selves, but then it also creates the space for them to invite other people, which can be frustrating and beautiful all at the same time. And so we are top heavy with fours in our community because this is such a value that oftentimes has been missed in the larger conversation that the church is in. And like I said, the fours are known as individualists. They're known as the romantics, the idealists. They feel with such depth and intensity that most of us have no idea about. This is why oftentimes fours are artists, songwriters, painters, poets, because they feel at such deep, deep levels. In fact, when a four walks into an art gallery or into an artistic expression, there's just something inside of them that leaps, because now emotion is seen with color and light and visuals and sound, and it's expressed in the most powerful form all around them. And they're like, yes, I can feel at such a deep level here in this place. While the rest of us are just like, oh, that painting looks good, right? I like that photo for some reason over there. See, fours don't have feelings, they are feelings. That's really what fours are at their core. And they breathe in the color and the texture and the beauty all around them. For them, beauty is a religious experience. If there was a phrase to define them, it would be Dostoevsky's phrase, the world will be saved by beauty, because they believe that one day this world will eventually find its ultimate expression of beauty, or it will crumble into pieces. And either one is fine for the four. But because they feel with such depth, fours are also oftentimes attracted to the darker things of life. Really anything that allows them to feel at such a deep level, which is why we get this classical image of the moody artist, right? The artist that dives into the depths of darkness with themselves, who lives and loves to live such a tragic life. In fact, they would oftentimes refer tragedy over the mundane and the ordinary, because at least it allows them to feel in some way, shape, or form. In fact, they would prefer tragedy over comfort, because at least in the tragic, they're feeling something at a very deep level. I mean, fours love wearing black and like a mauve scarf around their neck and big black glasses. They love this because it allows them to stand out. Like I said, these are the artists, the poets, the songwriters. This is Moulin Rouge, folks, right? I mean, this is at their core who they are. But here's the thing about fours is that they must stand out because they are individuals. They do not want to be seen as a member of the crowd. They must stand out at all costs. Even if it's just walking into a meeting, you'll know there are four because they're the ones when everyone's sitting around the table, they'll take their chair and scoot it back a little bit and sit over to the side. Because gosh darn it, they are not going to be connected to the whole. They are individualists at their core and who they are. And even the emotional upset feels more comfortable at times than the ordinary and the mundane. In fact, the routine and the ordinary almost feels claustrophobic to people who identify as four in the midst of all of this. And all of this is connected to this romantic, idealistic, beautiful world that is out there somewhere that they're attempting to create or obtain or to step into in some way, shape, or form. And all of this informs them that if there is this beautiful world out there, this ideal world that could be had, that could be experienced, that one day we will find into, fours also have this internal narrative inside of them that there is a tragic flaw within me because I don't ever get to step into that space. I can never actually live out this ideal, beautiful, romantic version of the world around me. And so there's this internal driving narrative that says there's something missing, there's something flawed, there must be something tragic within me that doesn't get to experience this level of beauty in the world because they're not experiencing that. In fact, this is what drives a four, is that they have this simultaneous need to be special and this internal drive that says there's something tragically flawed inside of you that will never allow you to get to that special space. And so they live in such a deficit at times, and they need to make up for this fundamental deficit that lives inside of them. And so they often live in this deep tension of longing for beauty and it always being out of reach. Of longing for hope and always feeling hopelessness. Of longing for this future that's out there and always feeling stuck in the present at best, usually in the past, of what has been and what's not available to them in that. And they often live in this tension. See, here's a problematic thing about that. If God is a God of beauty, then God himself is also always slightly out of reach or slightly mysterious or slightly unavailable to connect with in the middle of this. See, with a four, as we've talked about with every single one, that we all have a childhood wound inside of us, something that caused us to step into this way of seeing the world, engaging with the world around us. And for four, their wounding is often connected to feelings of abandonment. Maybe not necessarily being physically abandoned, but being different than their parents or other people around them and feeling like they just didn't fit in, like they weren't one of the special ones or they weren't one of the chosen ones or they weren't one of the ones who got ahead in life. And so they turn inward to cope with this feeling of deficit. And they can feel beauty stronger than most, but they can also feel hopelessness and darkness stronger than most, which makes them powerful artists. But also oftentimes powerful artists in creating a tragic life around them. And fours, when in an unhealthy space, the latter always wins. The tragedy always wins when they find themselves in an unhealthy space. There's lots of characters in the scriptures that you could identify with as four. So we're gonna go to one. Don't be offended, fours, but we're gonna talk about King Saul today. So there was a moment when the Israelites were essentially governed by God. They lived in this theocracy in the best of ways. God ruled over them and essentially said, I will give you everything. I will make sure you're taken care of. I will make sure you are covered. I will make sure that you have everything supplied that you need. And the Israelites looked around at the world around them and they said, yeah, everyone else has a king, so give us a king. And in the middle of this, God goes back and forth with them. And finally, God says, great, if you want a king, have a king. And so he turns over to them this man named Saul. Now, it's interesting how Saul steps into this role of kingship because Saul, at his core, was a four. And if you turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 9, starting in verse 17, if you have a copy of the scriptures, you can open up there. If you have the app on your phone for humanity, you can open that up, and there's a copy of the scriptures there. But we're going to start in 1 Samuel chapter 9, starting in verse 17, and this is what happened when the prophet Samuel was going to get Saul to inform him that he was going to be the new king. In 1 Samuel 9:17, when Samuel caught sight of Saul, the Lord said to him, "This is the man I spoke to you about. He will govern my people." Now Saul approached Samuel in the gateway and asked, "Would you please tell me where the seer's house is?" "I am the seer," Samuel replied. "Go up ahead of me to the high place, for today you are to eat with me, and in the morning I will send you on your way and will tell you all that is in your heart. As for the donkeys you lost 3 days ago, don't worry about them, they have been found." Now, wouldn't that be awesome? You're just like going about your day, having a moment with God, and he's like, "Oh, by the way, those keys that you lost, they're under the sofa, we'll get them a little bit later. Let's get to what we need to," right? Or your cell phone. So, he goes on. "They have been found. And to whom is all the desire of Israel turned, if not to you and your whole family line?" Now Saul answered, "But I'm not a Benjamite from the smallest tribe of Israel. This is not my clan. The least of all the clans of the tribes of Benjamin. Why do you say such a thing?" See, here's God choosing Saul to be king over the people, and Saul immediately responds with, "You have no idea who I am and who you've chosen. I'm insignificant. My life is small. I have a tragic existence over here, and you choose me in the middle of all this. Now, this actually starts out sounding like the quality of a good leader. See, I actually, whenever I work with leaders, there's a little, like, red flag that goes off inside of me when I come to someone and I'm like, hey, I think that you should really step into leadership. And they're like, I've been waiting. Right? God clearly has finally spoken to you, right? Then I'm like, right? Backpedal a little bit, maybe not. Because there is something about going into a leadership space of cockiness, of saying, of course God has chosen me, right? Of course God would step into this. But I would actually step into a space where I was afraid if anyone was too self-assured in stepping into this space. But here's the thing. There's a big difference between humility and self-degradation. Those two things are not the same. And they're oftentimes conflated in our culture. See, humility, as we've defined it with the one, is seeing yourself accurately. Of essentially looking in a mirror and going, all right, here are all my flaws. And I can clearly see them. I know where I oftentimes miss it. I know where I get off course oftentimes. But here's also all the beautiful things that live inside of me. All the things that are working, all the things that are powerful. See, humility isn't just sitting back and saying, my life's a mess and I'm a horrible person. Let me lower myself. Humility is saying, I have a clear understanding of what's going on here. And I know the cautions and I know the gifts that I get to step into with other people. And here's the thing is that the self-doubt and self-degradation that humanity oftentimes find themselves, that's an easy place for fours to go to. Fours oftentimes find themselves in self-degradation and self-doubt, which is absolutely distinct from humility. In fact, I would say that self-degradation and self-doubt is the flip side of arrogance. The same coin, but just the flip side. Because it is still essentially saying to God, I don't think you know who you've created me to be. Let me tell you the mess that you've done over here. And so there's a big difference between the two of those. See, in the ideal world of beauty, these fours can never actually live up to that ideal. There's always this beautiful standard out there that they can never actually step up into. So in many ways, fours are like ones, where if ones believe there's a perfect moral world that I can gauge myself and other people by, fours on the other side say, there's this beautiful, grandiose world filled with hope and beauty and passion that is out there somewhere, and I'm always gauging myself against that. And if I'm always gauging myself against that, it is never, ever possible to have that. And so self-doubt and self-degradation is the natural place that we drift to when we find ourselves there. And then, of course, when I never live up to the standard of beauty or hope or majesty or glory, then shame starts to enter into the story. Well, I'll never be enough, and I'll never be able to step into this space. In fact, even after Samuel convinces Saul that he is the guy, this is where he finds him in 1 Samuel 10, starting in verse 20, just a chapter down, 1 Samuel chapter 10, starting in verse 20, it says, when Samuel had all Israel come forward by tribes, the tribe of Benjamin was taken by lot, then he brought forward the tribe of Benjamin, clan by clan, and Mahdi's clan was taken, finally Saul, son of Kedesh, was taken, but when they looked for him, he was not to be found. Saul was not there. So they inquired further of the Lord, has the man come here yet? And the Lord said, yes, he has hidden himself among the supplies. Oh, man. So Saul's like, I refuse to be a part of this. I will go hide myself in the supplies over here, right? And they ran and brought him out. And as they stood among the people, he was a head taller than any of the others. And Samuel said to all the people, now this is about the most four statement you can ever hear in the scriptures, right? Then Samuel said to the people, do you not see the man of the Lord he has chosen? There is no one like him among all the people, right? This is music to a four's ears. There is no one like him among all of the people. See, even in the midst of him being chosen, he is hiding from the calling that's on his life in this. See, Saul was tall, he was slightly, he stood above everyone else. His physical stature even caused him to be an individual, to stand out among the crowds. And now that it had been time to take ownership of the glory and the greatness that lived inside of him that he had been called into, he finds himself hiding from this calling that is on his life. See, fours often finds will play this game of cat and mouse. When they find themselves being called into the life that God has called them into the glory, they say, notice my uniqueness, and I'm so tragically flawed. all at the same time. Please notice me. And there's something horribly wrong with me. And it's a very confusing message at times with fours. But how many of you identified that at times? Please notice me. Yes. And please do not look at all the flaws that exist over here. Right? And what that oftentimes leads to is this internal conversation that says, you have no idea what I've been through. You just don't know what I've been through. Or you don't know the depths of suffering that I am currently in. You just don't know. And so oftentimes this is like the teenage girl who's broken up with their boyfriend for the first time. And they're like, you have never experienced the depth of heartbreak that I'm in right now. You don't know how hard, you will never know how my soul anguishes. Shakespeare was a four and he did this beautifully. Read Sonnet 29 when you go home. And it's just powerful. But they live in that depths of suffering. In fact, when a four finds themselves in an unhealthy space, they will milk that suffering for all it's worth. In fact, they will just take advantage of it because that suffering at least allows them to feel something. And so they will find themselves taking that suffering and blowing it up to the nth degree. See, fours love to have a bad childhood, but they don't love to just have a bad childhood. They love to have four times as bad a childhood as anyone else. And everything tends to be about their history. And here's the thing, with fours, oftentimes, even when something is good, they will make it tragic. Because deep down inside, it at least allows them to feel something. If I can't have this level of beauty and feel the power and the majesty that God is calling me into here, if I don't believe that that is available, well, at least I can feel this over here. This darkness and this hopelessness and the despair and the tragedy that lives in. This is why oftentimes we call them dark artists, because they believe oftentimes at their core that that is just more powerful than hope or love, because that's just always out of reach in some way, shape, or form. In fact, fours become addicted to the specialness of the tragedy, the uniqueness of the tragedy. They oftentimes find themselves really trying too hard to be tragic, really proving to others how tragic and hard their life is. They will work very hard to be the different one. They will work very hard to be the outcast. They will work very hard to be the one who is the individual and who is seen in that way. And they will make sure that they go out of their way to make sure that they are noticed. Because deep down inside, they believe that they won't be in an unhealthy space. And this is what Saul was doing here. He was hiding in the supplies, saying, you don't know my story. You don't know how tragic I am. I know that I'm special, but I don't really want you to see the other side of the coin that lives here. Now, here's the thing. Saul became king, and he took on the responsibility, and he found themselves in this push and pull constantly of longing to have his own power and his own individualism, and then releasing that to God and recognizing that his specialness, his uniqueness, his glory didn't actually come from anything he did. In fact, he found himself partnering at this moment with this man by the name of David that many of us have heard of. And David was a powerful warrior poet. He was a seven, we'll get to him later. But he was a powerful warrior poet in the middle of all of this. And here is what Samuel finds himself saying when David, who he's partnered with, who he is ruling over, who is giving him essentially saying, look at my king, who I've done this for. In 1 Samuel 18, chapter 5, we just go over just a little bit. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 5, this is what happens in David's success. It says, whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officials, officers as well. And when the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs, with timbrels and lyres. And as they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. And Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands? What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time, Saul kept a close eye on David. And the next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house when David was playing the lyre, as he usually did, and Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it at him, saying to himself, I will pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. See, for most of the Enneagram types, it's normal for them to ask God the question why in some way, shape, or form. Why can't I be perfect? Why am I not needed? Why can't I achieve the things that I long to achieve? But for four, the question that they oftentimes ask God is, why not? They oftentimes ask the question, why not me? Saul asked that question. Why not Saul? Why not my victory? Why not my glory? Why not my life? Why not my power? Why not my moment in the sun? And oftentimes fours are driven by that question, why not? Why wasn't I the one that was chosen in the middle of this? And because of this, the default sin that fours find themselves, like every number has one, the default sin for fours is envy. That they constantly find themselves in a space comparing themselves to everyone else around them, thinking, why on earth am I not like them? Why don't I have that type of life? Why don't I have that type of beauty? Why don't I have that type of success? Why don't I have those type of finances? And they're driven by that. They look out at everyone else's life and think, why not me? Why don't I have the family? Why don't I have the money? Why don't I have the beauty? Why don't I have the hope? Why don't I have the career? And they want to be noticed. They want to be the individual, but because they can't have that, they've decided, well, I just better stand out among the crowd and in whatever way needed, in whatever may possible. And they want to be noticed because they have this belief deep inside, they will never have what others have. See, as for, so oftentimes look at Instagram, the conversation is, man, why don't I have that type of dinner? Why don't I have that type of family? Why don't I get to go on that type of vacation? It's the why not. See, in Saul's mind frame, there is no room for David to be great and for him to be great in the same space. It's not like, hey, we can be great together. Even Saul could have looked at this and said, man, look at my leadership. I'm the one who has chose David. I'm the one responsible for this. So if David killed 10,000 and I killed 1,000, I technically am responsible for 11,000, right? But notice his conversation was a space of scarcity, not enough, because he's comparing. Yeah. And this is what happens to fours oftentimes, is they get driven by, hey, that person is not someone I get to partner with. That's someone that I have to compete with to get myself seen in some way, shape, or form. But it also sets up this conundrum with their spirituality, with their faith, with how they connect to God. Because with fours, they tend to glorify the moments in the past. Of all the places where they succeeded and all the places where they got ahead and all the places where they were individuals and all the places where God had shown up. But then they look towards the future with such despair and hopelessness. Right. And so yes, God was a God of the past who may have met them occasionally here or there. But God is not a God that's available at his fullest form in my future. And so God basically becomes the jerk who met me then but refuses to allow me to enter into the glory that's available here and now or in coming up in the years ahead. So God always becomes the God of yesterday and never the God of the future. And for fours, they are just not convinced fully when they are in an unhealthy space that God will meet them in their future and that their best days are ahead of them. See, within the envy, the thing that is so poisonous about the envy is that there is never any room for hope, because there will always be someone better than you. There will always be someone more glorious than you. There will always be someone more majestic. There will always be more beauty. There will always be more majesty. There will always be something more artistically powerful. And if I'm always comparing myself there, there's no room for hope here in the present. Proverbs 13:12 is a passage on hope that we hear so often, but it says this. It says, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. Oh, wow. And so many people, when they describe fours in their most unhealthy state, is that they are heart sick. That there is a heart sickness that they find in themselves because they are longing for beauty, but not seeing the possibility for hope, and that distorts perspective. That distorts how they see the world or how we see the world when we find ourselves. And because a four's worst nightmare is to go unnoticed, to not be seen, they will do anything to be seen and to not blend in, to not be the one that is overlooked. So the mantra is almost, if I can't have a beautiful life, I will have a beautifully tragic life. And I will become a master at crafting that existence. Yeah. And sin is always the distortion of the gift. See, I believe that fours were put on this earth to create beauty. And when it is distorted, it becomes so beautifully tragic in its greatest form. And in that way, and hear this carefully, fours in some way love being depressed. In fact, most psychologists would say that fours are addicted to depression. That there is some type of an addiction to the hopelessness, to the despair. And most fours would say that they don't, that they hate it, but everyone else around them goes, yeah, you do. You like it at some level. And it's not a problem here. There's no shame in that statement. It's like, look, I get it. How many of you can relate that at some level you get a kick out of the hopelessness of life at times? It's like, at least I feel something in the middle of this. But there is a distorted energy that comes from all of that. And in that space, fours will almost always, in an unhealthy space, break the rules to get some type of attention. And in some ways, oftentimes, fours will break marriage vows to figure out how to be special. They will break ethics around sexuality to be special. They will break values at work to be special. They will find themselves as the morally ambiguous to be special in some ways. And so it becomes cyclical, as with all types, but oftentimes stronger with four, because here's the thing. People don't generally like being around that level of unhealthiness when it's in an unhealthy state. And so people leave when fours are often in the middle of this. And then it gives fours the perfect excuse to say, well, I told you my life was tragic. I told you people would leave. Yep. I told you that no one was going to see me and I'm the one left without. And it starts small, but it ends up becoming lethal. Yeah. And in the end, Saul ends up taking his own life because he could not handle the reality that David was more special than him in his eyes, and he couldn't handle the fact that someone else was receiving the glory out there that was unavailable to him in any way, shape, or form. He died a man longing to be uniquely known as glorious, but tormented by the demons of envy. And this is oftentimes where fours find themselves in the wrestling of that. I want you to watch this video. It's really just a piece of music with some lyrics. I knew I needed to throw some art in there for you fours. But this album by a band called Sleeping at Last, who actually wrote songs for the Enneagram, this is four. And I think it so closely captures the heart of the four. And so I want you to watch this and we'll continue.
Adorned in life.
So how do fours, or those of us who identify as fours, move towards a space of health? And what does that look like? In Colossians 3:15, I believe this is the antidote to living the fullness of what it means to be a four. In Colossians 3:15, it says this: "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace, and be thankful." See, here's the thing, is that we connect, when we connect to Jesus, when our lives connect to Christ, the scriptures say that we instantly become bound to one another in one body. That's why it says, allow yourself to be connected as one body, into one body you were called to have peace. And here's the thing, for fours, oftentimes, that sounds like bad news. Like, what, I'm just a member of the body? What about my uniqueness, right? What about my gift? What about my beauty in the middle of this? Why not in the middle of that conversation? But here's the thing, is that you connecting yourself to the body of Christ, connecting yourself to community, does not actually make you less unique. It's actually the only context where you get to be unique. Right. See, because here's the thing. My foot connected to my body when functioning properly is very unique, right? I mean, there's all kinds of amazing things that my foot can do that can take me and move and walk me into places and get things done, dancing and all kinds of possibilities. But here's the thing, a foot severed is just dead. There's no uniqueness to that. There's nothing powerful about a foot cut off from the body. In fact, we would just call that tragic. And so tragedy doesn't make you unique. Any human being on the planet can be tragic. What actually makes you unique is when you can connect and live in your gift. When you can actually take that and turn it inward. So connecting to the body of Christ, when you are connected to him, does not actually make you less unique. It's the only context for uniqueness. And then it says, interestingly enough, as he ends all this conversation, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as one members of body, you are called to peace. Notice the emphasis on peace, not tragedy, peace. But then he ends with this, and be thankful. Kind of odd, like, definitive statement that he says there. Because here's the thing, envy develops a very specific perspective on the world. Envy throws you to comparison and to judgment and to depression and eventually to suicide. But gratitude is what lifts you out of the envy. Being thankful for the beauty that God has placed inside of you and around you and in you and through you, that is what elevates the conversation. Gratitude is the anti-venom of envy. It is what removes us from that conversation. And the fruit of gratitude is peace. That when we can look out at the world and just go, oh, I am so thankful for who I've been created to be and all of the uniqueness in me, and all of the uniqueness in the people around me that I get to be in life with. And the thing about gratitude, it allows you to be content with here and now. Yes, it allows you to look at the future and to have a vision for what could be, but I am grounded here and now in the hope and the beauty that is here and saying thank you for now. And then Jesus invites us into this ultimate expression of redemption in the middle of this, taking all the tragedy of our past, all of the death and the hopelessness, and bringing it to life. And that when he resurrects all of the tragedy, that's when the beauty actually comes out. See, the tragic isn't the beauty. It's when it is resurrected into beauty that the world actually becomes more glorious because of your life and your existence. See, here's the crazy thing about Jesus is that to pause and be super cliche with you fours out there is that he already knows the numbers of hair on your head. I don't think Jesus said that because he was like, I know everyone's hair numbers. He was saying, I know how unique you are. See, Jesus, what God was saying was, I get it. I created you. I get how unique you are. I get how powerful you are. I get how glorious you are. And that is never something that you must muster up. That is never something that you have to fight for or strive towards. But that is something that inherently exists within you already. So stop fighting for it and step into a context that will blow that thing up to its most beautiful level. And all that deep emotion and power and beauty that's within you, it actually only becomes powerful when it all gets turned outward in the act of service. See, sitting and wallowing in hopelessness and brooding in darkness and feeling emotionally deep is a great experience for you. But it was meant to be a gift to be given away. And when fours catch on to that wow, I have been given all of this for the sake of service. I have been given this powerful ability to feel and to experience and to create, to give that away to the other. Everything starts to shift for them. See, fours, you must dare to allow Jesus to remind you that love is stronger than hopelessness. And that love is your greatest service and your greatest act of uniqueness to the world. And that hope is actually more authentic than hopelessness. Because I get it, fours. I get it, fours. You want to be unique and you want to be authentic. I get it. I'm with you. But let me just tell you, the lie is that hopelessness is more authentic. But the reality that Jesus breathes us into is that hope is the most authentic place that you could ever step into. And that can only come from connecting to a God who is willing to dive into the suffering with you. This isn't some like pep talk of sticking your head in the sand and saying everything's fine. But it's believing that God will meet you in the suffering and he will redeem it. That in the suffering is not where life is born. That is where he moves you from to experience life. And so yes, it is a both and. And you fours, you bring that to us so powerfully and so beautifully. You remind us that our suffering is a gift. But it's only a gift when it gets redeemed into something powerful in the middle of this. See, when fours move towards health, they are breathtaking. They are the people who remind us of how glorious and how beautiful and how profound this earthbound experience here and now is. They remind us of the creativity and the depths of God. And the life that he has allowed us to step into here and now. And they allow us to experience how much beauty he has for us all around us. For those of us who our feelings and our experience of that may be stunted or may not be as deep, fours come along and say, let me be your docent to take you along the journey of experiencing the depth and the creativity of who God is, that life is so glorious and so precious. That if we'd just be willing to believe for a moment that everything could be glorious, that he would step into that moment. They paint pictures of futures that we could only dream of when they find themselves connected to the God of hope. And so fours, I invite you out of the tragedy. That's okay that exists, but I invite you into a more authentic expression so that we might be served through your power. And that we might be called into an elevated experience here and now as you connect to the God of beauty and creativity and depth. Let's pray together. Jesus, I thank you for how eccentric you are. God, I thank you for all of the complexities and the depths and the majesty and the glory and the beauty that you bring. and how you have this unique way as the God who is an artist to take suffering and create beauty out of it, God. I thank you for those who identify as fours and who struggle with simultaneously longing to be the special one, to be the one who is noticed, to be the individual, and who also feel constantly lacking. God, would you remind them that their tragedy is not the end, that it isn't even the gift that they are. The gift is the beauty that you call out of them. And this morning, if you're here, and maybe you just feel like, man, my life has been defined by tragedy and hopelessness. Maybe not at a grand scale, but maybe you've just recognized, man, I believe more in the power of darkness and hopelessness than I do in the power of hope and beauty in life. And if that's you this morning, I want to invite you into a connection with Jesus, because that is the only thing that will transform all of that into something beautiful. And so if that's you this morning, and you're like, I want to connect to Jesus in a new way that would transform all of that into something beautiful, would you just, with no eyes looking around, just raise your hand and say, I want to connect to Jesus, maybe for the first time or for the first time in a long time. Yeah, who else? Awesome. Several people in the room. I just want you to pray this prayer with me. They're not magic words, just you connecting to God. Just say, dear Jesus, I give you my life and my brokenness. I give you all of the tragedy. I know that you are Lord, that you are in charge. And so I release that over to you. Would you come as the artist God that you are and bring life and create beauty out of my hopelessness and brokenness? And I will live in that. We thank you in Jesus' name.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the Humanity Church podcast. We hope that this was a meaningful experience, and we look forward to connecting again next week for another conversation around what it looks like to live by faith, to be known by love, and to be a voice of hope. Again, for more information about Humanity Church, you can visit us online at humanitychurch.com. And if you want to support the ongoing work here at Humanity Church, including this podcast, you can give online in about 10 seconds by texting the word Humanity Church, one word, to 77977. Thanks, and have an amazing week.